Today's Fan Run Podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Basketball teams are entering the final month of the regular season, and they're gearing up for the playoffs. DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app, is putting you in the center of all the action with a chance to turn $1 into $100 in free bets. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use promo code FANRUN in all caps when you sign up to turn $1 into $100 in free bets if the basketball team of your choosing hits a three. That's code FANRUN in all caps for a limited time and only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Must be 21 or older and Tennessee only to bet. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line 1-800-889-9789.
It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
So, stream is still working, but for some reason, no internet access here in the station. We have been transported back to the dark ages. Guess we'll have to do this the old-fashioned way. GP3, are you ready?
I've got it. Ready to go.
Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by Crown Cleaners. Participate in Starch Madness. Go to fanrunradio.com to get the bring in 3 shirts, get the 4th laundered for free coupon from Crown Cleaners.
All right. Number 1. This news broke late last night, evening time, but Walker Kessler has officially made his announcement. He has committed to Auburn to play for Bruce Pearl.
Oh, man. The Barnes Bashers are not going to like that, Bear. Exactly. I couldn't have said it better myself.
I mean, Jamie would probably like it.
Oh, there he is. It's weird because we had heard yesterday that he was leaning towards sticking with North Carolina. And while it's disappointing that we weren't going to be getting him, I'd rather him go back to North Carolina than go to Gonzaga or Kentucky especially. But going to Auburn is almost worse because now he's playing for a team that just
now we got to deal with
owns you. And it's I don't know, man. That's not good. But I can see why he would want to go there because Pearl lets his big men shoot threes, run the floor. Yeah. If he's good, then that'll be a good place for him to showcase his talents.
All right, number 2. The Denver Nuggets' Jamal Murray tore his ACL last night. The betting odds for the Nuggets to win the NBA championship have dropped from plus 1,200 to all the way to plus 3,000.
He had an ACL?
Yeah.
That's terrible, man. Hopefully he recovers quickly, but yeah, I would say that would pretty much torpedo any chance of Denver's ultimate success.
I think we're having trouble with
that. Yeah, go ahead and cut him off, and I'll message him. You go right ahead, guy.
Okay. All right, moving on to number 3, James Conner, former Pittsburgh Panther running back in college and Pittsburgh Steeler in the NFL, has signed a new contract with the Arizona Cardinals on a 1-year deal.
Is he still playing at a pretty high level?
He's not bad, but he's just always hurt. That's kind of been his thing. He's had trouble staying healthy.
Yeah, and even when he was – I never remember him being super spectacular with Pittsburgh, but just solid, man. He was just a good, strong NFL running back.
Well, he came in right after Le'Veon Bell left the Steelers and was kind of able to just
– yeah, keep things rolling there. Yeah.
Wasn't really an upgrade, wasn't really a downgrade.
We'll see. Arizona, I mean, they want it now, right?
Oh, they're going all in. Yeah. We'll see. All right, and last, number 4, Tennessee has announced their seating plans for the Orange and White game. There is no official attendance cap or anything of that sort. It's just going to be open seating, free to whoever wants to come in, every other row for the entire lower bowl.
Interesting. Have to take some calls on Orange and White game attendance predictions. I'm going to say if the weather is good, I think that there will be a strong 30 to 40,000 people at the spring game. It's a 4 o'clock kickoff, so I think that'll be palatable for folks to get in from all over East Tennessee, like I say, as long as the weather is good. But it's free, and there's plenty of room to spread out in Neyland Stadium. I don't think this is ever going to be a huge crowd, but I hope that people will get out there and so show some support for the team and get their first look at Josh Heupel's squad, and hopefully they put on a good performance as we bring Bear back in. I think we got him on the G3 Help Me hotline right now. Internet just whack here at Fan Run Radio right now. Bear, what's your prediction for attendance at this year's Orange and White game, April 24th in Neyland Stadium?
Oh, hell, they'll be lucky at 20,000 out there.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it'll be over 30.
You're nuts. There's no way in hell. I mean, it might be if it's a really pretty day or something.
Yeah, I mean, the weather obviously plays into it, but I think it's – the Orange and White game is just a party. Granted, it's not a very
– What's the date on it?
April 24th.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm gonna put the my I'll be stunned if there's more than 20,000 people in there. It's back.
Really? We can't even keep him on the phone lines? It's not enough that our internet has to go down? Our stupid phones have to go down too? Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me, Comcast? Really? Really? I just have to sit here and talk to Guy for the next 2 hours?
Hey, don't say it like it's a bad thing.
I mean, it's not a bad thing. I talk to you like you're fine, but...
I'm no Bear. I get that.
No, I mean, do you know of anybody that you would want to spend 2 hours consecutively talking to?
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
In most conversations, most of my interactions, if they last longer than 10 minutes, something has gone terribly wrong. If I can't communicate with you in a minute or two, and like that's you know, if we're just hanging out watching a game, that's one thing. Oh, well, we'll roll up the sleeves here. Lean into it, as they say. Fan Run Radio, Russell and Guy with you. We do have Nick Bromberg scheduled to be with us here in about 13 minutes. That just became an adventure. We'll see if that works out. I'm more bullish on the Orange and White game crowd size than Bear is. I don't think that, first of all, 30,000, I mean, there was a time when, I mean, how many people went to the Orange and White game in the mid-90s? It wasn't that much. It's not like they filled up Neyland Stadium. I mean, that's always been a 30 to 40,000, 20 to 40,000, really, person event. It was only when Butch Jones made such a big deal about it. Didn't he say we need to fill it up one year?
And I think we got to like 55,000 or something like
that. Yeah, and that was like, oh my God, 55,000 people at an Orange and White game? So that's a high mark to hit. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to get that. But I think, again, you know, if the weather cooperates, I could see 30,000 people packing into Neyland to see that game.
Yeah, I think people are excited to see what the offense can do, see some of the quarterbacks go to work. So I could see 30,000, but I could equally see 20,000 just as much with how fed up a lot of the people seem to be.
Today's Rickard Ridge Barbecue smoking hot question, if you're just joining us, are you interested, and if so, how interested are you in Tennessee baseball as a story this spring? 66% of the audience says they are very interested. And last I checked, it was only like 7 or 8% saying that they were not interested. So folks expressing a lot of interest for this so far. Nick says, I care more about Tennessee baseball than Tennessee football at this point. I've pretty much given up on football. Oh, come on, Nick. You'll be back. You'll be back.
It's easy to say that in April.
Brian says, and he's responding to Chad Withrow earlier, 6-6 should not be the goal for Tennessee next year. If they go 6-6, I don't know if I'd consider it a failure, but it should definitely not be the goal. I would agree. I would agree with that. No, 6-6 should never be the goal. I think, well, first of all, any modern football coach, they don't talk like that. No coach goes into it thinking, well, I want to go 9-3 this year. Even though, to me, that is a realistic goal and a healthy goal to set. If we win 9 regular season games this year, that would be an outstanding success for Josh Heupel's first year. Now, I think 8-4 would be pretty good too. 7-5 wouldn't be the end of the world. 6-6 would be disappointing to me. I mean, if we're at a point where 6-6 is anything other than disappointing for Tennessee football, and maybe we are, that's really sad to me. Vintage at the Vintage on Twitter says, I just bought ESPN Plus just to watch Tennessee baseball tonight. Peyton says, I bought it 2 years ago to watch that basketball game against Washington and Canada and canceled it right after. Well, you might want to get it back now. Nick says, the basketball team the last 2 years has not been likable at all. I would argue that the basketball team the last 2 years just has not been winning at a rate that we want it to following a season when we won over 30 games and won the SEC regular season championship the year before. I don't think that this team, this year's basketball team was unlikable. Who specifically did you not like on this year's team? There were players that did not perform well, but was Fulkerson unlikable? Was Kamwa or Urosh unlikable? I don't think they were unlikable. They were frustrating to watch because they didn't perform well. But to me, unlikable is somebody who maybe is a malcontent, somebody who pouts on the side. Bears back. Somebody, yeah. So I'm trying to think like
an awfully strong word.
Yeah, Arian Foster to me was unlikable.
You just didn't know how to appreciate him. I like Foster.
Was anybody on this year's team unlikable to you specifically?
No, there's not really been that many of the guys over the years that have been like unlikable.
I would agree with that. I would agree, man. I just think that
I can't think of one.
No, man.
Derrick Rogers.
Okay, yeah, he was unlikable. Sure.
He was unlikable just because it was just so maddening that you knew he's probably borderline Hall of Fame kind of talent.
Bray.
Bray was pretty unlikable down at the end, especially when they pulled that stunt they pulled up at Kentucky.
Obviously, Garantano had some pretty unlikable moments.
I kind of pitied him more than anything. He was easy to beat up on.
Me too. Me too. But he was unlikable at times. Going back to that Georgia Tech game when he's pouting on the sideline. He didn't help himself.
I had more of a problem with him doing the Robin Hood deal. It's like, dude, you're on a 3-7 team, buddy.
Robin Hood.
Where he draws back the bow and all that silliness. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Like Robin Hood? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Oh, it wasn't Robin Hood. Well, Guy, you're the younger generation. It was a Hunger Games thing, right? Wasn't that what he was doing?
I don't know if he was doing that, but Fernando Rodney, the pitcher in baseball, has always done that when he closes out games. So I don't know if he was imitating Fernando Rodney.
Was it a Ramsey Bolton reference?
Ramsey Bolton. I don't know. Just boom, gotcha. I don't know.
No, I honestly cannot think of a Tennessee basketball player post the Buzz Peterson era that I found unlikable. And there were some.
I can't think of one in my lifetime.
Tony Harris when he charged off the bench that year at Kentucky.
Get out of here!
Don't act like. Listen, I like Tony
Harris
now.
He had on that great sweater and those gold chains. I was ready to throw with him.
Yeah, people were very upset about that. That is not a minority opinion.
People were upset about that.
The great, the late great Gary Lundy wrote an article about him I can't remember if he called him a punk or something like that, or described the action as punkish. They called a press conference the next day to address the column that was written in the Knoxville News Sentinel by the otherwise very mild-mannered Gary Lundy. Yes, Tony Harris was highly unlikable.
At one moment, I didn't mind it.
Maybe not to you, but to many people.
And
that's why Jerry Green got fired. He was unlikable. His team went to the NCAA tournament every single year, won a lot of basketball games, and he didn't connect, man. He told the fans to go to Walmart.
Man, he pissed everybody off.
Getting a vote for Stephen Pearl.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Stephen effing Pearl to you, Russ.
Stephen effing Pearl. I can't even like Stephen Pearl, and he's a fellow West High Rebel. I got to disown him. He only went for 1 year, man. He's not a true rebel.
He's a rebel.
He doesn't have that rebel blood, that real spirit.
His ditty did. Flipped off the principal out there in the hallway.
How did he even end up zoned for West when his dad lived up there in Gettysburg?
Victoria Hills.
They lived in Gettysview.
Was this before or after alimony? Is Mama living in Sequoia Hills?
I don't know.
I mean, there's no telling. You know how? I mean, come on, man. It's the Greater Knoxville High School Association. There's no telling. He may have just wanted him at West. I know. I know. Buck gave the principal the double bird, two-fisted salute up there, and he's getting thrown out of
you
that.
You know, gym. Good and well. If he came here in modern times, he'd be playing over there at Catholic. You know that. He'd be the only Jewish player in Catholic high school history.
He might not, because he wouldn't be getting any playing time at Catholic.
Oh, stop. Stop.
You think he would?
Stop.
You're nuts.
Well, he certainly would have in those days, but he would have now.
He would now.
Oh,
he
stop.
Wouldn't see the floor. Don't be silly. He wouldn't.
Listen, I know he got preferential treatment here because of his dad, and yeah, he played ahead of Maimon. That's really messed up and all that stuff. But he played meaningful minutes in SEC basketball games here. Don't pretend like he couldn't play for Catholic High School, man. That's stupid.
He would not see the floor at Catholic.
He wouldn't see the floor.
Not varsity, wouldn't.
He wouldn't even get off the bench. He couldn't come in for a five-minute cameo? You're high. You're absolutely wasted.
No, I'm really not.
You're higher than Charlie Sheen at Bonnaroo.
Nope.
I keep trying to – oh, man. It's so frustrating when you don't have the internet. How frustrating is life without the internet, man? What did people do? What did we do before? Read a newspaper? Make notes? It's ridiculous.
I don't know. The internet's kind of been readily available for me my whole life.
It's working.
You were the one who had to grow up with
it. You guys are still coming through loud and clear on my headset over there on my desk. I don't know what the hell you two have done down there today, but you've thoroughly covered yourselves in glory.
Yeah, it's
just incredible.
Stephen Pearl wouldn't play at Catholic.
He wouldn't be the first coach's kid that wasn't going to get playing time there. That's all I'll say.
Let's let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back and try and find Nick Bromberg if anything works around here. Back with more right after this. It's Fan Run Radio.
The Drive.
Bankruptcy, divorce, personal injury. Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio. Russ LeBaire back with you. Cruise along on a Tuesday afternoon edition of the show. Pleased to be joined now by Nick Bromberg of YahooSports.com. Good afternoon, Nick. How are you, sir?
Good. You know, it just hit me that we're basically like 2 weeks out from the NFL draft now. So now it's officially spring and draft season.
Love what they've done with the NFL draft. I'm such a curmudgeon sometimes, Nick. You know, whenever they say, oh, we're going to do, you know, this thing you've loved for years? Well, we're going to do it completely differently from now on. I always react with indignation. Oh, man, why are you messing with something that ain't broke? I've never been more wrong. than I was about the NFL draft when they moved that thing to Thursday for one night. I was like, why are you doing this? It's the draft. It's on Saturday and Sunday. It's always been that way. Why would you mess with that? Oh, it's fantastic. I watch the entire thing now on Thursday night. Social media is so much fun to communicate with people about the draft. The NFL really got it right when they messed up or messed with the draft a few years back.
Absolutely. You know, and I also think, too, the side benefit to that is not only is the NFL capitalizing on the bigger TV audience of a Thursday night compared to where it was the Saturday-Sunday format, but I think it's a really big deal for guys, for college football fans, and then it's also for the guys who go second and third round. Because the second and third round, it was kind of, you know, the afterthought after the first round, I think previously, at least to me it was. And now it has its own night on Friday night. These are a lot of guys, you know, if you're even a casual college football fan, there's going to be players in the second and third round where you recognize nearly every single one of them because those are guys who were all-conference selections. They were guys that sometimes were even first, second team All-Americans that fell that far. And so you have not only do you have the top 32 picks get their own night, you then get the 24-hour cycle of, you know, who's going to be the first off the board in the second and third round, especially if there's quarterbacks remaining. So I really do like the Friday-Saturday setup, or the Thursday-Friday setup, and then everything on Saturday because, you know, I look at the NBA draft, and I really realize there's not a way to really break that up because it's only two rounds, but it just feels like it takes forever when you get down to the second round and it's like, you know, 11:30 Eastern.
Yeah, and I've tuned out by then, man. The NFL has done such a good job of making itself a year-round product. The season flows right into the playoffs and the Super Bowl, and then you've got the free agency not long after there. You've got the draft, the OTAs, the off-season workouts and camp, and then right back into the next season, there's always something going on. Nick, what can college football do? I feel like that has become a year-round sport as far as the hunger for college football news, especially in college towns like ours. What can they do to freshen it up, man? This spring football seems like, maybe it's just because Tennessee's been down, but not as much buzz as there has been in years past, in my opinion.
No, I think it's true, and I think, you know, we're seeing a rebound, I think, in a lot of places where, you know, people are paying attention to sports again, but college football and spring football doesn't seem to have that same effect. I know we all lost it out on 2020. But then, you know, there's so many schools around the country who have either canceled their spring games entirely or saying, hey, we're holding our spring game behind closed doors. Because I think we would feel a greater sense of, hey, everything is getting closer to be back to normal if we were able to, you know, have 70,000 people at an SEC spring football game. And that's just simply not going to be the case right now. Maybe, hopefully, it'll be like that in the fall where we're going to have full stadiums. So I think us still being in the throes of this pandemic and still kind of building back up to being normal has really dampened the enthusiasm for spring football. And I also, too, think this is kind of the new normal for college football, and you're going to have spring practice kind of stand alone as the only really postseason thing before you get in those summer doldrums. Because while I totally understand why the early signing period is now in December, I get it for coaches. I understand how it works out. For a lot of good reasons, it takes away from the impact of National Signing Day in February. I mean, with that is one of the events that's gone from boom to bust so quickly with the advent of the early signing period because there's hardly any drama. I mean, it was wall-to-wall covered on that first Wednesday of February, and now it happens over 5 days in December where we're in the throes of the season, bowl season, and it gets lost, and come February, there's hardly any top recruits who haven't signed yet.
Well, this season it happened in the middle of the season. There was a game that week. It was crazy. I mean, these college coaches were managing National Signing Day while they're getting ready for their last game of the season, I believe it was. Jeremy Pruitt had an internal NCAA investigation playing out on top of all of that. So, it has changed a lot. One thing, and I believe we've talked about this with you before, Nick, seems to be some more momentum for playing an actual spring game. I know Mike Gundy came out pretty vociferously for that earlier this year. We talked with our friend Mike Griffith, who covers Georgia down in Athens, and he said you have a split squad where you could play you know, Tennessee could play Oregon. You send half the squad up to Oregon to play there, and the other half stays here. Oregon sends half their squad to play here. Both teams get a home game. You get to sell it, sell tickets to it, put it on TV, make money off of it. I thought that was a pretty intriguing idea.
You know, I like that idea, but I also think that's an idea that immediately sours in a lot of people's minds if a star player has a season-ending injury during one of those games. And, you know, because we always seem to have, I think Georgia is a great example of, look what's happened with the wide receiver core right now, with George Pickens likely, I think, out for the 2021 football season with his knee injury in spring football. So, you know, I think if we had something, it would be great. It would be fun. We all could look at it, but I think immediately people would go, oh, that's a great idea if a star player went down. Now, we can talk about, do the benefits outweigh the positives? I think that's a worthy discussion to have. But I do find it interesting, too, on the spring football note, you know, a lot of people seemed really excited about the FCS spring football. And it's, you know, it's still going on. There's still a few teams that are playing. But enthusiasm, I think, has really started to wane among the schools that are still playing football, because you've seen a lot of opt-outs. You've seen a lot of teams say, hey, we don't have enough players. We're punting on the rest of the season. I think it was one of those ideas that was great in theory, but then with COVID still sticking around and the way that the spring football season unfolded, especially with these FCS teams preparing to play a full fall season once we get into August and September, I think a lot of teams found that this was a better idea in theory than it actually was in practice.
Yeah, I guess my thing would be these are just exhibition games, right? So coaches are already, theoretically, they're going to be holding their star players out. And I just think you can get injured in any practice type situation, which is what happened with Pickens, I believe. If you're playing, you know, if your star quarterback, like if you're Clemson playing in one of these situations, you wouldn't play Trevor Lawrence in that situation, right? I mean, you would, or maybe you work out an agreement with the other coach, you put him in non-contact jerseys. I don't know, but just spitballing here, Nick, trying to drum up a little interest for college football in the spring.
I'm with you. You know what? I like the idea. There are, you know, it's worth discussing, that's for sure, because, yeah, like I said, you know, college football, we do need to have some pop come up, you know, now March and April, and I'm really hoping we get that in 2022, because we're not getting it now, and we certainly didn't get it last year.
Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports, with us this afternoon on The Drive, breaking it down, talking a little college football. Nick, just open-ended question here for you. What has caught your eye, other than the Gundy thing and the Pickens injury, spring practice-wise, themes that you're watching as we head into the off-season, looking ahead towards hopefully getting back to a more quote-unquote normal 2021 college football season?
You know, actually, the things that we've been noticing have been the things that we haven't noticed. This has felt like a really quiet off season so far, and we've been having this conversation among us, with those of us at Yahoo, that, you know, whenever we say that, we think something crazy is going to happen. So, knock on wood, we don't have a bombshell college football story. But, you know, there's not a quarterback battle that, you know, really stands out right now. Because I don't think a lot of coaches, especially in this environment, are going to be deciding their quarterback situations now. They're going to take it until August, or maybe even up to the first week of September. So we're not going to get a lot of quarterback. We thankfully, outside of George Pickens, we have not heard about, you know, devastating injuries to a lot of key players across the country. You know, and you know, looking at it from a competitor standpoint, I saw the ESPN FPI rankings that came out today, the top 10, and Iowa State, I think, number 4 popped out to a lot of people. It certainly did to me, though. I think Iowa State is a top 10 team. And the one that really had me scratching my head at first, that I apparently need to do a little more digging because I had not had this first impression of them, is Mississippi State at number 8. I was not expecting that, or Oklahoma State at number 9.
No, you and me both, man. Mississippi State, a top 10 team in the country. That would be pretty darn impressive. I love Mike Leach. I did not think that he had them in the top 10 in the second year. I know it's the FPI, and it's probably some computer algorithm that spit this out somewhere. It's not necessarily real life, but still, that's pretty impressive. If I'm Mike Leach, I'm selling the heck out of that on the recruiting trail.
Absolutely. And also, you know, you look at Oklahoma, who I think they have as the, you know, Alabama obviously is the favorite to win the national championship again. But, you know, an Oklahoma team that I think I'm looking at them this year, because not only is it, do you get to the college football playoff, can you have Spencer Rattler be a Heisman finalist and continue the line of Heisman finalist quarterbacks under Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma, but I think Oklahoma is far and away the Big 12 favorite, even with Iowa State. I do think we're going to have a rematch in that Big 12 championship game. But Oklahoma, at some point, and it has to be soon, has to take the step from team that wins the Big 12 and makes it to the college football playoff to team that actually puts up a competitive game in the college football playoff. You know, and it can't – this has to be the year. If Oklahoma is going to win the Big 12, I don't necessarily know if they have to win and make it to the national championship game, but you cannot get the doors blown off like has been ever since that overtime loss to Georgia in the Rose Bowl.
Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports, with us this afternoon on the show. Nick, speaking of quarterback derbies, we've got one playing out here in Knoxville as Josh Heupel looks for his first QB in his first season here in Knoxville. What are your thoughts? It seems like they've pretty much already said, look, this competition is going to play out through the summer and into fall camp. And I'm just wondering, assuming that it is a legitimate competition, but if you're Josh Heupel and you've got three guys, you're getting set to add a talented freshman this offseason to that mix. If you see somebody in spring practice, and let's just say theoretically it's Hendon Hooker, the transfer from Virginia Tech, that you feel like, all right, this is going to be our guy. I can see it. He's got the tools. He's got the experience. He's picking up the system quickly. Are you better off going ahead and naming him the guy so that he can start putting his stamp on this offense and establishing himself as a leader on the team? Or are you better off letting it play out throughout the offseason to see if one of the guys who might be a little bit behind in the race can catch up?
You know, I think it depends on the personality of the coach. I think there's some coaches that like to have the finality early because they think especially if they're convinced they know who it's going to be. If there's enough of a lead between their QB1 and QB2, I think there are some coaches that want to have the finality to say, hey, you're the guy, you can get comfortable, let's do this. I think in a situation like this, if I was the head coach, I think you have to let this play out, especially with the way that you're coming into a brand new situation at Tennessee. You've got a program that I think is transition is probably the nice way to describe it. And you've got a guy who you brought in who's learning the offense. Everybody's learning your offense. And you have a transfer quarterback learning your offense. And then you've got guys that are still on the roster. I would let this go all the way until the last second. And I, gamesmanship aside, I think that's always funny when teams don't want to name a quarterback before the game. It's like, you know, coaches talk. They know who's QB1 in practice. They know who's going to be rolling out of the field in week one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am very intrigued to see, you know, Hendon Hooker doesn't seem like he fits the Josh Heupel mold in terms of what we saw from Dylan Gabriel. He reminds me a little bit more of McKenzie Milton, though I think a lot of people overrated Milton's running ability. He was a much better passer than he was a runner. His rushing stats really never popped off the page at UCF. But, you know, I've been intrigued with Harrison Bailey for a while. I want to see him do what he can do because I do think, you know, given the right circumstances, he could put up numbers similar to what Gabriel has put up under Heupel at UCF.
Nick, where are we racing this weekend?
We got Richmond. So we're going a lot of short tracks on the schedule right now. We went from Bristol to Martinsville and now to Richmond. It's a day race, not a night race. Maybe NASCAR will have better luck because we got rained out at Martinsville with all that rain. So Richmond this week, and then in 2 weeks, everybody's favorite track, Talladega.
All right. It's getting into the thick of it with NASCAR. Nick, always appreciate your time, my man. Yahoo Sports at Nick Bromberg. Thanks for jumping on.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yep, Nick Bromberg making his presence felt on the G3 Help Me Hotline this afternoon. The drive continues. Open up the phone lines to you, 865-546-8200. Back with more right after this.
Fan Run Radio has made the switch.
All right, back here on the drive, Fan Run Radio continues. Russell LeBaire back with you. Bear, Nick Bromberg, Yahoo Sports. What did you learn?
That we're going to be going short tracking, and I didn't realize Talladega was coming up that quick.
You like Richmond?
Yeah, it's a good track. I don't like it during the day. That's always kind of historically been a night track.
Yeah, it gets.
Or it has been the past little bit. So
that nice little paperclip track.
Yeah, and they kind of. I think that may be one of the tracks where they actually flip the track, so to speak. Like they did in Atlanta. You know, like in Atlanta, start finish line used to be the backstretch. I don't know if you're aware of that. And they kind of flip the track around. I'm pretty sure they've done that with Richmond as well.
Why don't they ever make them go around backwards, turn right?
I don't know. It would have been a good question for you to ask Nick.
Be kind of cool, huh? Go around Bristol the other way?
Isn't that a two-way traffic?
What? Put a double yellow line around it.
Sure, why not? Yeah, and you'd have, you know, like at Talladega, they'd be, you know, if they hit head-on, they'd be hitting with the force like 430 miles an hour.
But the people on the inner portion of the track would have a shorter distance to cover.
Exactly.
That's not fair.
I don't know. I am excited about Talladega. We'll see how it goes. So.
Let's go to the phones here. Westchester is next. Good afternoon, Westchester.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. In answer to your first question, if you make them go right, you've got to change the modern rules of pit stops, or you can't gas the vehicle under current rules.
You'd have to put
the gas is on the gas guy has to keep his foot currently on the wall so that he can receive the tire coming from the opposite side on the change. Because he's technically not in the pit box. It doesn't count. It's a little loophole they found. But, yeah, he'd have to be totally over the wall.
We get around that.
But
you got to think bigger, Westchester. Don't let little details like that prevent you from seeing the big picture.
Yeah, don't let laws get in the way.
You're visionaries here.
Right. Hey, a couple quick things before we get to my point. The J.G. Archer thing, the reason that's so funny is if you've got three different generations that can't figure out what the heck he was doing, he probably shouldn't have done it. Tony Harris, probably the most easily non-likable person in recent Tennessee basketball history, besides the coach he played for. You know, if you're out of the game injured and you show up on the bench wearing sweatpants, but then all of a sudden you can sprint full court to get in a fight. Yeah, that was not a Tennessee basketball proud moment. What I want to talk about, and please give me a little leeway on this, because I know it's borderline, something y'all don't want to talk about, but what is the difference in a Vol Network employee and a employee of State Run? Are they the same thing? Are they an entity? There's a reason I'm asking. I mean, let me go ahead and say that first,
I have no idea.
Some of them are probably listening, and I'm probably about to say something wrong. I don't know because I've never worked it either, but my understanding is, so for like John Wilkerson works for Cumulus, whoever owns that cluster now, but also works Vol Network. It's almost like a side gig, right? You can do that in addition to working at that radio station.
So there's got to be enough talent they can pull from. They can find somebody better for the middle innings of a Tennessee baseball game than Vince, right? Y'all listen to him?
What are you doing?
He's absolutely terrible.
What are you doing? Are you taking a shot
here
at Vince, nice guy Vince Ferrara?
Get him out of here.
Have you listened to him?
Yes, I've listened to him. He does a fantastic job.
He's terrible.
He's not terrible.
He's
You're absolutely terrible. You're terrible.
Oh, there's no worse announcer on the Tennessee airwaves.
Let Westchester crap all over our show
because I'm trying to set him straight. Hold on, you can't just say he's terrible. Why is he terrible?
Well, he's terrible. That's what he does this all the freaking time, man.
What I don't understand, like, what are you talking about?
Oh God, Westchester, these convoluted phone calls, dude.
You haven't gotten a phone call. He just called the crap all over.
Calm down. Both of you.
Can we flush bear so we can talk, Russ?
No. Both of you, just calm down.
I'll tell you what. I'm getting ready to flush myself. I'm done.
I can't. All right.
I can't believe Bear is fighting for Vince Ferrar.
Westchester, hit the bricks, man. Get out. Both of you, just morons, just ate up with dumbass.
You better watch your stuff with me, man.
Both of you.
Cut him off, guy.
This is why we have the reputation that we do. Because we got you see the irony here, right? You see the irony. This is what the state-run guys. They sit in there, up there in their ivory tower at their little meetings, and they're sipping their coffee, and they're laughing at those yahoos over at Fan Run. They can't do it. It's unprofessional. It's a three-ring circus. And we've got a guy who calls our show to take a shot.
Complete moron.
Cut him off! Guy, what are you doing? I'll tell you when I want it back. And we've got a guy who calls our show to take a shot at them, and no sooner does he do it than our show devolves into you can't even hear it. Nobody knows what's happening. You've got Westchester screaming. You've got Bear screaming. I can't even be heard. I can't hear myself think. I'm trying to have a conversation, trying to have a little back and forth here. And
you can't have a back and forth with the stuff. He's an idiot. I like the guy, but he's an idiot. How many times do we have to explain this to him? This dumbass agenda. He's gone. What the hell was the point of that? Come on here and just drag down some poor guy?
Phil is next. Hi, Phil.
Oh, it's all right, W.
What's going on, man?
Not much. Calm down, Bear.
I haven't listened to that moron for going on 7 years now.
Well, that's why I call him Winchester. I think you need to keep Trey as the name. I mean, that's Trey's a radio name, not that guy stuff. That's, you know, we ever heard a person named Guy on the radio.
I'm having trouble with it, Guy. I really am. It's an unnatural name. I don't think I've ever known a guy named Guy.
Well, try out GP. I like that.
All right.
It rolls a little bit better.
All right. We're going to give it through the end of the week here, and then we're going to reevaluate, okay? And we'll reevaluate Monday. We're going to keep rolling with this. It's only day two of GP3. We'll see how it goes. We'll give it through the end of the week. I'll try, but I'm struggling. I'll admit. Struggling with a lot of things.
The Vol Network, one thing I got, we need to, it's about time to get rid of the Voice of the Vols and get a real one in there now. That's the way I look at it, since we're going to start talking about.
You guys think it's so funny. You come in here and take shots at these people. They're just abstract people. They're not real people to you. They're just people that annoy you because they don't work here, or whatever it is that annoys you about them. Here's the thing you don't understand. Like, I know these people. I see them and communicate with them all the time. You realize how hard it is to have to go up to, like, that. You know, maybe they're not listening. Maybe they never hear about this or whatever. But I know for a fact, the last time we had our friend Bob Kessley, one of the nicest guys in the world, who's been nothing but encouraging to me for over 20 years now, the last time we had him on the show, some idiot calls in and started ripping him. Bob was listening. And he hollered at Trey Wallace. And he was like, what the hell? I come on your guy's show and somebody rips me? He understands that we can't control what the callers say. But you realize, like, how uncomfortable that makes some of these interactions for us. I'm not telling you what to think. You can have your own opinion. That's fine. Not everybody likes us. I get that. It is what it is. But Come on, man. Come on. I don't know. Maybe it's my fault. No control, man. You let the inmates.
You ready to apologize? It is your fault.
You let the inmates.
It's not 100% your fault. It has been from day one. You've enabled this kind of behavior, even out of me, from the start of this damn show. I blame Terry Fair as well, Dave Hooker, all of you guys. You guys have fostered an environment of complete debauchery and no rules at all from the day this show started. It's your fault, Russ. Put that in your pipe and smoke it, big boy.
Is he done? Is he still on? TJ is next. Yeah, just go ahead and cut this part, this whole section out, guy or whoever you are, and send it to the Radio Hall of Fame, as wherever that is, as soon as this is done, because this has got to be, and this is saying something, this might be the worst segment in the history of local radio. This right now, you all are witnessing history. You realize that, right? A host that is on the verge of a complete mental breakdown with no control, no control over his own show, no control over his co-host, no control over his producer, no control over his guests. He's cracking up. What's for dinner tonight? When does that game start? Like 8 minutes? Tony Vitello.
Yeah, it does.
Down. TJ, the Kentucky fan, is next.
I just lost him.
Of course you did.
He's going to call back. Sure. I think he's calling right now.
All right. That's about right.
You calmed down yet, Russ?
Hey,
we'll get you right back. I'm
sorry about
that. Russell.
Yeah.
You calmed down?
Sure.
Okay.
I got people taking shots at Todd Howell on my Twitter. Even my social media feed is not immune from you morons. Real nice career I've carved out for myself here. This is fun. Now we got TJ now. This is where I'm at. I need a Kentucky fan, a toothless Kentucky fan, to save my show. TJ, do something, please, man.
Hey, look, you know, I got all my teeth. I can't speak for other Kentucky fans. But, Russell, you're doing a good job, man. Keep it up. I like listening to y'all's show. And, look, here's the thing I got. Not y'all. Westchester, and I like Phil sometimes. But y'all are crazy. I don't even know what y'all are arguing about. But y'all's baseball team is what, number four in the nation? It's literally baseball season, and the fan-run radio callers, y'all got to have something to be happy about. I know football didn't end the way you wanted to. I know basketball didn't. But daggone it, y'all got one of the best baseball teams, not only in the SEC, which we run baseball, but in the freaking nation, man.
Number three in the country. Put some respect on it, TJ. Number three in the USA Today coaches poll.
Is that what it was? Because I saw on
That's
Saturday
what it is.
Down south. I
That's
saw
what it means.
Saturday down south. They said it was
Saturday down south.
Either way. Come on, man. And look, y'all got y'all. Kentucky didn't even have a spring football game this year because we're giving out the stupid vaccine at the freaking grocery store filled, and y'all are actually getting football this weekend. So y'all, hush. Jesus, the callers, stop it.
Y'all go get that stupid vaccine, TJ. You going to go get it? You get it right there at Kroger Field?
Well, I'm military, so it's probably going to be mandatory for me. So I got probably over 120 vaccines in my body anyway. What else? What's another one?
What's the weirdest reaction? What's the weirdest shot you've ever had to take in the military?
Oh, God. Anthrax hurts.
Ugh.
And then there's another one. I forgot what it was called, but you get it when you first get in, and they prick you literally like 50 times in one spot. And then
what?
It grows into a blister, and it falls off.
What?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
But it lasts for 10 years. So
pretty sure it's smallpox, isn't it?
Yeah, smallpox. Yeah, it sucks.
TJ, thank you. Thank you. I feel like we might have a chance now. We might have a chance. TJ getting us back on track. Stay with us. The Drive continues. Hour number three coming up.
The Drive.
March Madness is back. All this month at Crown Cleaners. Bring in three dress shirts and get the fourth laundered for free. That's